The Nationals Review Podcast, the official podcast of thenationalsreview.com. This is episode 20. My name is Colm, but I cannot do the Nationals Review Podcast alone because I need the heart and soul of the website. He is no other than Charles Flegel.
Mr. Colm, how you doing?
I'm doing wonderful. I'm doing better than the Nets.
Yeah, 500 team right now.
Yeah. But well, still, luckily, most teams in the league are sitting around that 500. No,
you know,
that's not true.
It's like there's heartburn because they're behind the Braves, who are doing pretty well. I mean, the Braves have one of the best records in the league.
Right.
Although not as good as three teams in the Central. But it's like it's not even where they sit in the standings at this point. It's like their run differential is negative. They're a 500 team after a third of the season.
Right.
And so they finished the season 82-82. That would be bad. You know, if they get up plus 10 for the rest of the way, they're still not a playoff team, right? I mean, if they're like, I don't know, 87 wins.
Yeah, exactly.
Five wins above 500 and, you know, what, 87 and 70, whatever. I'm not.
Yeah, 79.
Five. Yeah. Anyway. It's not enough right now. So,
well, here's the thing that I don't get is that, the home record is just awful in my opinion.
Yeah. They're above 500 at home,
right,
but it ain't. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, some of this has to do with some of it's just untimeliness. Like I'm a big believer that say whatever you want, most players and most teams hit the same way with runners in scoring position as they do with runners not in scoring position. So, you know, they left a lot of guys on base and all this stuff, but it's not because they're not timely hitting. They're just not hitting, period. And then you look at, like, Wednesday's game, and they actually scored six runs, and their unstoppable pitcher, who's, you know, probably top three Cy Young votes if the vote came out now, Jordan right. Zimmerman, got shelled. And so it's like, that's just crappy timing, right? But I don't know. As we speak, they did get shut out by Freddy Garcia.
Yes.
However, look, he did that 2 years ago. He pitched for the Yankees, and he threw games like this right. that you're just like, this is Freddy Garcia doing that? So once in a while, he can pull it out, even against good teams when he was with the Yankees. Yeah. But the fact is, over the last week, they have hit the ball, and it's not only been Ryan Zimmerman. And so you hope with Worth coming back and Harper coming back, plus a couple of other guys that are starting to hit, like, look, they're not the prolific hitting team that some people imagine them being, but they can still hit, and they will, and I don't think they'll finish at the bottom of the league with hitting. So it's a tough time to be a Nats fan right now because they're only 500, which is something that, you know, you never thought you'd say a few years ago.
No, I agree. I mean, luckily also we have the wonderful Miami Marlins in our division, so we'll never have to worry about that.
You know, it's a better time to go 500 early than late, and it's not because of teams trying to make runs. Like, it's just the way the season is set up. Their alleged tougher part of the schedule was definitely early. So,
oh, for sure. Are you kidding? Yeah.
Yeah, so totally. Hopefully when guys come back and they start running on all cylinders, they're really a good – look, they're four and a half games behind the Braves, something like that. Maybe after tonight it's 5.5.
Right.
They're a really good week away and a bad week away from Atlanta, you know, Atlanta having a bad week, from leading the division because there's so much time left. The question isn't about time. It's about are they ever going to start playing like we think they're going to play? There's plenty of time, if they play well, to mop up Atlanta.
Right.
Atlanta just looks good from our perspective. They're not that great this year so far. I mean, they've had some really good games, but, you know, they don't have the best record in the league.
Right.
They don't have the second or the third best. So, you know, there's a lot of baseball left to be played.
Right.
But before we get into the baseball.
Yeah, before we got into it already.
We got into it early. Yeah. We're excited. Right. But are you drinking a beer right now, sir.
I am drinking a Coke Zero right now, actually.
Coke Zero. Yes. You sound like you might be a little...
It's allergies.
Not feeling good. Allergies. That's good.
They show up, like, out of nowhere. It's mostly because I have the window open, because I like the nice, like, warm outside air. I'm in the basement here.
You like to see the pollen come in?
Yeah, I like the pollen to come in. But, no, I'm feeling... I need the Coke Zero, because I got to keep going, because I got a lot to do. But how about you?
This is a man that works at night. I have a beer.
Oh, which one?
It's called an Apollo.
Apollo Ono.
Apollo Anton Ono. It is 6 Point, which is, I don't know if you heard of 6 Point, but they sell the 4-pack cans, if you've ever seen those. They're like sort of tall boy cans.
Oh, yeah.
From New York. Yeah. I've never tried the Apollo. It is a, it's like a wheat-ish beer, summer-ish beer. Uh-huh. It's all right. I'm not going to say I'm going to go out and buy it again, but it's not bad.
Right.
You know, had better, had worse. I like some of the 6 Point beers a lot. This one I'm a little eh about.
Interesting. I'll have to. Maybe I'll check it out when I start drinking again.
And on the topic of drinking, exciting news. We're both big fans of Zane Lamprey.
Oh, yes. Thank you for sending me that link. I forgot to get back to you because I went back and listened to the recorder. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, he's he did 3 Sheets, which was an amazing show.
Amazing.
Mojo and Spike, and then he did another show which I never got to watch because it was on what's his name, Mark Cuban's network, which we don't get on Comcast locally.
Right.
But that show was basically, it's a travel show, and the premise is he goes places and like drinks with the locals and like sees what the local customs are and all that stuff.
Awesome.
So anyway, it's pretty much my favorite show that doesn't involve baseball. And so he's like, he pitched it again, and the networks love the idea. Basically, his story was they love the idea, but they were like, we don't want a show about it drinking. So he couldn't sell it, so he did a Kickstarter thing. So if you go to www.chug.tv, because the TV show is going to be called Chug, he's basically raised enough money to fund 6 episodes, and he's trying to raise enough to fund more. And he has all the details about it on there, but... exciting because we both pledged and we're both going to get the show.
Amazing.
And, you know, at this point, the show's just going to be online. And if somebody picks it up, he may never actually put the old episodes online, although I'm sure.
Yeah.
Well, but we got our T-shirts heading our way and our digital downloads eventually after they go film it. So
yeah, I cannot wait. I think, no, they have one done, right? Wasn't one show done?
I don't know if they actually did one.
Oh, maybe then it's like the concept video.
Like a concept pitch thing. So anyway, I highly recommend if you are a fan of travel shows and like to drink or just see culture and other people drink. He's a funny guy, and I'm excited that they did that because it's like you and I like this kind of, you know, internet, new media, new market kind of things.
Right.
It's like he used Kickstarter to fund it. It's going to be online. So there's some of that like nerdy factor that we like too. So.
Right. But we have something special for this episode, don't we?
Absolutely. We're actually going to start with something that we don't normally do, which is an interview. We filmed it. Don't worry. You're not missing anything live. We recorded it last week, so we're going to cut to that. We interviewed Elliot Smith. A local reporter who talks a lot about the Nats. So we'll pass it on to that. We'll give you the intro there, and then we'll come back and talk about some live stuff. We are very honored to have with us Elliot Smith. He's an author of a new book about last year's incredible Nats season. It's called Beltway Boys, Steven Strasburg, Bryce Harper, and the Rise of the Nationals. He's actually a local. He lives in Northern Virginia. And he's a freelance writer who's covered the Nats for MLB.com and the AP, among other places. He's spent some time as a beat writer with the Mariners. He's covered local teams around us for the Post and the Washington Times. So, Elliot, welcome.
Welcome. Thanks. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Well, we appreciate your time. Tell us a little bit about the book.
Well, I think the main thing was it was a real chance for me to tell this story to a lot of people who, you know, may not be familiar with the Nationals and how, you know, impressive what they did last year was. As you guys know, I mean, you guys have been following the team for a long time. And a lot of times they operated in a vacuum. I mean, it was, right. you know, a small group of fans here and really nothing nationwide. And so what this book does is, you know, gives you a little history, gives you a little background, and it's a primer for, you know, a franchise that's on the rise. You know, by no means is this the complete national story. It's more an opportunity to find out some of the basics about the team, about, you know, these two transcendent players. And it's an opportunity for a lot of people to kind of fill in those gaps maybe on their Nationals knowledge. And so, you know, I always tell people, you know, the hardcore fans are, you know, they're going to know a lot of this information in the book, but I think it's great for the hardcore fans to pass on to some of these new Nationals fans and say, hey, you know, this is kind of the background of this team.
So you talk about, you know, you do see this as a bit of a beginning. I think it can be hard for some of the fans to really appreciate how good they were last year and what they actually did. 95 wins, making it, you know, to their first playoff series. What made you write about them now as opposed to waiting until what many of us see as the inevitable run, even if it's not a World Series win, a real sort of dynasty of success, even if it's not World Series? Why now?
Well, I think this was a good time to kind of serve as an introduction to this team, to this franchise, to these players. And I think it's interesting to talk more about how it developed and, you know, where, you know, these players came from, where this franchise came from. You know, when they get to the top, and, you know, I think we all can agree that, you know, this franchise is definitely on the rise. And, you know, in a few years from now, who knows, we may be talking about, you know, World Series and things like that.
Oh, wow.
Sure hope so. Oh, wow.
I think everybody's going to know about this team. And so I think right now, you know, last year, you know, the Nationals get to the playoffs and a lot of people nationwide are like, I have no idea, you know, who these guys are, you know, where did they come from? And I think for us here in the DC area and for those who have really followed the team, you could kind of see it coming. I mean, and so for me, and when I talked to the publisher about it, it was sort of an opportunity to say, hey, this team is on the rise. Let's kind of get in on the ground floor and tell this story.
So that's a good point you bring up about seeing it coming, because, you know, I certainly didn't expect them to do as well last year as they did. I was always of the mindset that, you know, 2012 is going to be the year that they have, you know, a good season, a winning season, and 2013 is when they're going to start making the playoffs every year. Colm, on the other hand, predicted them to make the playoffs this past year. So, well, Elliot, what was it that you think made them so much better than most people predicted?
Well, I think, and, you know, talking to some of the guys and finding some quotes from the guys, I mean, they felt like really the end of the 2011 season really was sort of the thing that was, you know, they got that confidence. They got that feeling that, hey, you know, we could probably put this together over the course of next season. And so when they went into spring training, I mean, the confidence was there, you know, and a lot of people, I think a lot of national media, a lot of people were kind of picking them as like, you know, a dark horse team, that sort of thing. I don't think anybody would have, you know, I don't think anybody predicted what actually happened last year.
Best record in Major League Baseball. Things
exactly.
Like that. I think it really was a surprise.
Yeah, I think that element was a surprise, but I do think, you know, I think the Nationals felt, and I think, you know, some people close to the team felt that, you know, it could be a playoff season if everything broke right, and everything broke right to an amazing extent.
Now, what about, what, you know, last year one of the big storylines, obviously Strasburg was a big storyline, but Harper coming up. And so much of it, it's hard to think now because of how well-respected he already is after basically one full year. I mean, his one-year anniversary was just a couple weeks ago. What did you think about all the reactions to his personality and how everybody sort of had impressions of him coming up?
Right. I mean, I just think people had no concept of what kind of person he was. I think, you know, I think a lot of times we automatically think about you know, prodigies or people that we label as, you know, exceptional talents who maybe do unique things to get to a certain point as spoiled or, you know, as a diva, as it were. And what Bryce did was, you know, completely shatter those things. And I think, you know, I talked to Scott Miller at CBS Sports, and, you know, he told me, he admitted, you know, he kind of took a grumpy old man attitude when they brought up Harper, like, you know, I'm not talking about this guy, you know, he's got to prove it. And he was at that, you know, weekend series in LA, and it totally blew his mind to see him, you know, hustle hard, play the game, you know, with the kind of reverence that he plays it with. And I think he did that all year. He turned people's notions of him on its ear. And, you know, you see him in the clubhouse talking, and, you know, of course the kid's cocky. He's 20 years old. He's got the, his
must
world
be hard
is
for
his
him
oyster.
Not to be. Yeah. It'd be hard for him not to be.
It's hard not to be, but in some ways that's a good thing. You need a guy who feels that way about himself and is confident. And he's proven time and again that, you know, he takes the game just as seriously, if not more, as you know, most of the guys in the majors.
Yeah, I think his parents need to be given an award for the job they did with that kid.
Absolutely.
Yeah, of course. I mean, you know, we've seen so many examples of, you know, stage parents and,
yep,
you know, parents that have, you know, just pressured their kids into oblivion. And, you know, Bryce's parents have done a fantastic job, and, you know, Bryce is a level-headed kid, and, you know, he's proven that time and again.
Wow.
Now, we pay a lot of attention to the numbers on our podcast,
yes,
and our website, but, I mean, the reason we like baseball is for the storylines, right, and the things that you're going to tell your kids about. You're not necessarily, you know, you might use the numbers to compare eras and this player did this, but you're not going to tell your kids about somebody's OPS in 2012. You're going to tell them the stories. One of the stories that I think we'll all remember from last year was Harper getting hit by the pitch and then stealing home off of Cole Hamels.
Yes.
But there were a lot of other storylines last year. What were some of yours that maybe we haven't talked about yet that you really think really, you know, solidify what that season was for the Nats in 2012?
Well, yeah. I mean, there were so many, you know, just interesting little side things. You look at a guy like Chad Tracy, you know, from opening day and the development of the Goon Squad and all that. I mean, that, you know, you have to have that on a good team. You know, you have to have players, bench guys that step up and that are comfortable in their roles and aren't going to complain. And, you know, these were guys that, you know, they all just had great contributions, and that is key. And I also look at, you know, Jason Worth, obviously, you know, his first year in D.C., there was so much pressure on him, so much, you know, everything was around the money. And, you know, he pressed a lot. And you saw last year, you know, he fought through injuries. He did some things. He played in different positions, hit in a different spot in the lineup. And his leadership in the clubhouse, I mean, I think a lot of guys really looked to him. He had been in that winning situation. He had been in those pressure situations. And I think what he did behind the scenes was invaluable.
Yeah, and I think it was a little surprising for a lot of us because he has sort of a standoffish personality publicly. And I think it became obvious throughout the season that he wasn't like that in the locker room. And he really was pretty well respected by the rest of the team.
Right. He can, I mean, you know, he can be prickly a little bit with the media. I think a lot of it, you know, during his first year was just the pressure and the expectation. Mm-hmm. You know, now, you know, he's a guy that you can go and talk to, and, you know, if you catch him, he'll give you some great stuff, and he'll really, you know, he's a thoughtful player. He's kind of one of those guys that, you know, approaches the game in a thoughtful manner, in a serious manner. And yeah, I think it was great from the clubhouse perspective with a lot of young guys. You know, they turned to him and kind of followed his lead. You know, was he pissed about something? Well, maybe I should be too. Did he kind of brush off, you know, a tough loss? Okay, well, I won't worry about it, you know, that much. And so that counted for a lot last year, and I think it really helped a lot of the young guys.
Do you think he's sort of the number one guy in terms of leader in the clubhouse?
I think so. You know, Zim has been here for a long time, but he's very quiet. He's not kind of a rah-rah guy.
And he's a lead by example.
Yeah,
bust his butt and make sure everybody else does it too, kind of thing.
Right. He shows it on the field, and I think he shows it on the field as well, but I think in the clubhouse, he's, like I said, he's a guy that a lot of people turn to kind of gauge his reaction. And, you know, a lot of times the media will go and talk to him and hear what he has to say. And so I think he's with what he's making, you know, with the expectations, that's kind of his role. And you can see him accepting that. And I think he's comfortable with that.
So what about, before we wrap up, what do you think about this year's team? They obviously haven't been they didn't come up to the start that they did last year. They had some injuries last year, too, and guys like on the Goon Squad really filled in much better than they have this year. The pitching looks like it's starting to come around. What do you think about the team this year?
I mean, I still think, you know, they're very solid. They have to be considered, you know, one of the favorites. I mean, I think them and the Braves are going to be battling it out all year. But, yeah, like you're saying, I mean, guys, the bench guys were so huge last year, and this year they've pretty much been a non-factor. But there has to be some expectation of that. I mean, I think everything went as good as it could have possibly gone in 2012. So, there has to be a little bit of a step back. And so, you know, they got off to a slow start. They've, you know, they've been hovering around 500 with the little skid on the West Coast. But, you know, like you said, the pitching staff is starting to come around. Ryan Zimmerman's starting to come around. Adam LaRoche is starting to come around. So, you know, I think this team is going to be in the playoff mix. They're right there. I mean, you know, they've got so much good pitching. They've got a solid bullpen when everybody's got their act together. I think the defense has obviously been a concern. I mean, you guys have seen it. I mean, they've been very sloppy at times, and I think that's the biggest problem. When you've got, you know, such good pitching and, you know, the offense hasn't come around yet, you've got to play good defense.
I mean, yeah, they really haven't. And they have good defensive players who just haven't been playing well defensively for whatever reason.
Right. And it's confounding, you know, to see them kind of throw away runs like that. And so, you know, you hope that that's something that is just a blip and it will turn around. But, you know, to me, that's the thing that really, you know, you have to keep an eye on. Is this team going to continue to be as sloppy as they've been so far? And you know, that's the one thing that I think can hold them back.
Yeah, well, that's an excellent point. We hope they can turn around to the point that after I read this book, I'm looking forward to getting my copy, that you can write a book about them winning the World Series at the end of this year.
And well, I hope to read that one. I hope so. I hope I can keep adding on to the back end of Beltway Boys if they keep winning and excelling. So I'm looking forward to that as well.
So are we. Well, Elliot, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. Again, the book is called Beltway Boys, Steven Strasburg, Bryce Harper, and the Rise of the Nationals. You can get it on Amazon. We'll put a link on the website so everybody can click on it and buy it. You can even get it on your Kindle or whatever if you can't wait for it to ship. So thanks a lot, Elliot. We really appreciate your time.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Awesome. Really cool that Elliot was able to talk to us. And now I've been following him on Twitter as
me
well.
Me too, yeah.
I don't think we mentioned, but his Twitter is, I believe it's _. Let me look because I want to get it right. It is _ or @, of course, you need the @.
Yeah.
@ Elliot Smith. Elliot J. Smith. So it's one word, ELLIOTTJ Smith an underscore in the front. And he does freelance work for, like, the Express that you see on the Metro and the Washington Times and all kinds of things. MSN, MLB.com. So very, very cool, very excited that we had him on. Very thankful for that.
Yeah, and we'll have the link to his book in the show notes.
Yes, and Colm, I didn't get to tell you this. I received a package today from the publisher, and we have two books to give away.
All right. That is amazing. We'll have to come up with an idea, or do you have an idea?
I have no idea, except I would love it if listeners of the podcast and readers of the website maybe gave us some suggestions other than, hey, send one to me.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, I don't know if we're going to do a contest or something like that, but I don't know how we're going to give these away, but I want to just kind of give them away, and it'll be a few bucks shipping, so I'll just send it to you. I don't care. But I can't figure out how to do it. So I got three copies from the publisher, and I want to read one and write a review, and maybe I'll give that one away too when I'm done.
Amazing.
Maybe I'll give it to you, and then you can give it away. Maybe. But if anybody has any ideas of how to give the Beltway Boys away, let us know.
Wow, that's great.
And now, sir, on to the issues of the day.
Let's talk about it.
We talked about the 500 team, which we now have, and I am, you know...
Are you even worried? I'm not even worried right now.
I'm not worried. It's too. The problem is it's too early to worry.
Right.
In terms of record, the way they're playing, I'm a little worried about the hitting. I actually think the pitching is coming around, and we can talk about Strasburg in a minute. Gio is still a little iffy, but look, even if Gio doesn't have a great season, assuming Detweiler comes back and pitches well, you have three strong pitchers. Heron has looked pretty good. He's looked like a better than average number five.
I agree.
Since the first few starts, probably since the first four or five starts. So it really comes down to the hitting. And, you know, Espinoza, maybe he's done. Who knows? Maybe he can't hit anything at all anymore. But when you have Adam LaRoche, Ryan Zimmerman, Jason Worth, Bryce Harper, and Denard Span, and Ian Desmond in the lineup, they're going to score runs. You just worry. The thing that worries me isn't anything other than their health. Like, one of the reasons that people criticize the Worth contract is because, performance declines, but so does, like, plate appearances per year when guys get older.
Right.
Like, Worth needs to stay healthy. And Ramos hasn't been able to stay healthy since he's come. And if Ramos could stay healthy, Ramos is a really good hitting catcher. And I don't have, like, the real evidence of this per se, but I tweeted back and forth with Ben Lindbergh, who's the editor of Baseball Prospectus. He does a lot of stuff on, like, catcher framing.
Right.
And he said that basically Suzuki's one of the worst in the league and Ramos is one of the best. And so I think what Suzuki has going for him is he doesn't do anything horribly. And catcher framing may be like, okay, maybe he doesn't frame the ball well, but, like, he's a decent he's a decent fielding catcher. He's got an okay arm. He hits okay. He's all together. He's a package where you're like, all right, he's not one of these guys like Will Nieves, who was good defensively but just couldn't hit the ball at all.
Right.
Like, Suzuki's better than that. But Ramos is good at all of these things. He's good defensively. He's good at framing the ball. He's good at calling a game. He's good at hitting. And so I think there's a drop-off there. And I was surprised at the beginning of the season when Davey wanted to basically split time between the two of them.
Right.
And now it's like with Ramos gone, you're like, Suzuki's fine.
Right.
But that's just another chink in the lineup. And so I guess going back to what you were asking me, the only thing that scares me about this team is health. Like, Harper's got to be 100%. Worth has got to be 100%. Zimmerman's got to be healthy. Ramos has got to be healthy. I think Ramos is probably the one they could do the most without because Suzuki is a good enough fill-in. He's not a complete gap between the two guys, but I don't know.
No, I couldn't agree with you more on everything you're saying. I think it also comes down to they need to just start clicking and working together. It just seems like there's so many times where I see, like, Bryce hit a home run and then no one else is doing anything on the team.
You know what I'm waiting for? I'm waiting for – they haven't been on any streaks this year.
Right.
They had like a – I think the most they've – I think the most wins they've had is five, and that was once in a row. And the most losses they've had is four, like twice. And so obviously you don't want more than four losses ever, but like I think it's five wins in a row and then a couple of threes and then a lot of ones and twos. And they need to just start pounding out some wins. And I don't know when that's going to happen. I mean, they go to Atlanta Friday night. They're playing at Atlanta.
Yeah.
Now, today's game, as we're talking, it's Thursday night. Today's game was a bad example.
Right.
But in general, if they come out and pitch the way they can pitch, they're going to win the games. And you hope they don't get shut out like they did. And that happens once in a while, like the best teams get shut out. But you would like to think if the hitting's starting to get together at all, then this pitching is good enough to be depended on, which is what they did last year. They weren't a prolific hitting team last year either.
Right.
It was the pitching.
Exactly.
And so, go ahead.
Go into the pitching. No, to talk about your article, the quiet dominance with Strasburg. I mean, right there, when you break down his rankings, I mean.
It was amazing to me. Yeah. I kind of just did it on a whim. I was like, I want to see what Strasburg has been up to in terms of the rest of the league. He's top 10, just barely in a lot of them, in ERA, strikeouts, and innings pitch. So, like, his earned run average is really good. He had that one game. It's a storyline, but it was just one game where that error went through and he let in all those unearned runs. But it only happened once.
Right.
The rest of that ERA really reflects how many runs he's given up other than that one game. He's tops, and you know, he's near the top in strikeouts. But he's also, I was surprised, eighth in innings pitch because
right.
Everybody talks about
that he's pitching a lot. Yeah.
Right. And it's early enough in the season that it's not just, oh, well, he's been healthy and he's been able to start every game. No, there's dozens of guys who've been healthy and been able to start every game. The fact is, Strasburg's worst outing, I think, was five innings. And that was the one where he gave up all those unearned runs. But I think that was his shortest outing. So, you know, there was talk that he never makes it to the seventh or he never makes it to the eighth or blah, 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 blah.
Right.
That's great. He's still going at least five innings every game, which, okay, I'll concede that that's not enough from your ace. But if you look at his entire month of May, there was that one four unearned run game where he only went five, but two games of seven innings pitched and two games of eight innings pitched.
Wow.
And, you know, 35 strikeouts in 35 innings in May, an ERA of 1.80.
Right. That's the impressive stat right there.
And that includes his first start in May where he gave up four runs in seven innings, which is not a great start. It's not an ace start, but they won the game and he pitched seven innings. Four runs is a little too many, but it's not horrible for seven innings.
So, because seeing what he's doing right now, could you see at the end of the season him having a better season than Jordan Zimmermann?
Absolutely, because I mean Zimmermann has the head start, right?
Right.
Zimmermann has the jump, and Zimmermann, if I had to bet now, I would say Zimmermann looks so good, except for last night. I mean, maybe that throws a monkey wrench into it.
Right.
But he's been so good that I'd bet the money on him having the better season. But, geez, the last three starts that Strasburg pitched, I mean, he basically gave up one earned run every start, except for maybe one where he gave up zero.
Yeah.
And so he's starting to look like an ace. I'll put it that way.
Right. So the article's great. You should check it out on the site because it breaks it down. And before we go anywhere, there's another pitcher that got a call.
Mr. Carnes.
Mr. Carnes. I was a little shocked by this.
I was not expecting him to come up either.
I
mean, I don't know. I was thinking it was going to be like Zach Duke or... I mean, I made the case that I thought Craig Stammen should be a spot starter.
Right, exactly.
I get why they don't want to do it because they don't want to mess up his mojo in the pen. Although his last couple of outings weren't great, but I don't know if we talked about this on the site or on the podcast or not, but there is an article I recommend reading on the site about Stammen and about his change in pitch selection since he went down and came back up.
We did talk about that.
Yeah, but if you want to check that one out, that one was from earlier in May. But the Carnes the Carnes thing did surprise me, but Carnes in general has surprised me. I didn't really know about Carnes.
I didn't either.
I think I mentioned when he made all these, you know, top 100 prospect. He made the top 100 prospect list this past
I know, winter. Number 99.
Top 10 for the Nats by everybody that puts out these lists. And I was just kind of like, you know, I knew he had a good year, but isn't he 25? Well, it turns out he's 25, but he had major, major shoulder surgery and basically missed like 2-3 full seasons. Right. So, I mean, what did you think? Did you get to watch him pitch?
I did. I caught about maybe 2 innings of it.
Yeah.
And he looked great to start off.
He's throwing, you know, nearly 95, right?
Yeah.
I didn't see him use it that much. I was kind of excited. Keith Locke said he had what he called a yellow hammer, and I had never actually heard that term.
I mean, I've never heard it either.
Heard hammer, but right. It's just another term for a curveball, and he's got a really, really big curve. And he threw it some, but I think he threw it about 20% of the pitches. But he really threw his two-seamer and his four-seamer a lot, and it's kind of reminiscent of Detweiler in that maybe McCaddy was just like, keep throwing the fastball. And he was pretty effective with it. I mean, he didn't have a great start, but he had a good start, and he had an encouraging start in that he was throwing it over, I think, his average velocity. I looked on the Pitch FX, you know, Brooks Baseball. His average velocity was like 94.5, something like that, on his fastball. So he's got movement. He's got velocity. He's got to keep the ball down in the zone, which he didn't do probably enough of, which was why they teed off on him a little bit. But what I want to see is I want to see him come out and start again, and I want to see him fool people with that 12-6 curve. That's what I want to see, because he's got enough velocity that, and it, I can't tell yet because he's only had one start and it didn't go that long. I can't tell if he can fool them, right? Because if they see that big curve coming, they're not going to swing at it.
Right.
They're just going to sit and wait on a fastball. But if he's got them mixed up and not knowing what's coming, that'll be awesome to watch him just make hitters look foolish. So.
Right. So do you think he's more of like a project, or do you think he'll stick around, or he's going to be the guy they're going to call up now?
I think he's their sixth man right now he's starting, I think, Sunday against the Braves.
Right.
That's not an easy place.
Isn't that game on ESPN at night? I think it's like a big game.
I don't know. That may actually be an afternoon game. I'm not sure.
Okay. I thought they were moving it to the night game because it was such a big game.
Yeah. They might have.
He's a big guy. That's the one thing I like. He's like a big guy. He looked to me like a project. Like he's got some stuff that they just need to let him get comfortable with.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
He's got great stuff. I mean, again, I don't know the details of how much his fastball moves, and I don't know if guys can pick up his curve or whatever, but he's got velocity and he's got a good curve. And so.
Well, two guys. Didn't he give up 2 home runs in that game?
Yeah.
Yeah, two guys picked it up pretty well.
Well, actually, I think, you know, I don't remember who reported this, but somebody quoted people as basically saying that he wasn't changing up velocity enough, which, okay, I get it. Hitters can wait on your fastball if you're throwing the same fastball the whole time, but that's what Detweiler does. Detweiler is successful because of location. And so.
Yeah, he's like a Greg Maddux.
And so. If Carnes can throw that fastball a lot, if he can locate it exactly where he wants to locate it.
On a side note, real quick, how great is that kid in Baltimore? Have you seen him pitch yet?
The Gossman or whatever?
Yeah.
He hasn't been good since he came up, but, I mean, he's got amazing stuff, right?
He pitched
against Carnes.
Yeah, so I guess I saw the same, like, beginning of that game, and I was just like, wow, this guy is pretty.
He's pitched 2 games, and he's given up, like, I think 11 or I'm looking at it right now. Let me find. Okay, 9 innings pitched, 11 earned runs, right?
I think he's, like, 20, though. Isn't he, like, 4 really home young, runs. Too?
He's
like,
22.
Yeah.
He's young, but he's got killer strikeout stuff.
And yeah.
He's probably, I don't know that he's ready, but.
No way he's not. If you're telling me those stats, that means he's not ready at all.
Yep. It's like name a pitcher on the Orioles, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'm a Tillman fan.
Look, they're not horrible, and It's the bottom of their rotation that's the real problem.
Yeah.
That's why Freddie Garcia was pitching today and killed the Nats. But, like, Jason Hamill's been bad this year. Shocker.
He was going to be bad.
He's got a great record, but he's got, like, a 5 ERA.
Right. He pitched out of his mind before. Yeah.
But, like, the only one that's doing really well is Wei-Yin Chen.
He has some nasty stuff. I'm not going to lie.
But his deal is he doesn't. I mean, he's Wei-Yin Chen. I don't know.
He just has.
But like Arrieta's not anything for them.
I think he's terrible. I never liked him. No, I'm a Tillman. I think is the guy that in a couple of years he's going to be the number one.
Maybe he's only 25.
That game, it was him versus Strasburg, wasn't it? Yeah, the other day.
So okay, so you watched the games this week,
right?
What do you think? This was a little bit of a topic on Twitter. What do you think of the split broadcast? The Masson broadcast.
You know what? I just wish they do it like they do it. There's two channels and you get to pick who you want, to be honest. I'm not an Orioles fan. I don't care about their guys.
I hate it. You know what I hate? Let me give you a good example of why I hate it.
Why?
The Orioles team was in and they show somebody at Ben's Chili Bowl getting a half all the way. And the guy on the Orioles goes, "Oh, look, a hot dog with onions on it." I'm like, that's like standing at – that's like if they had
Boogs, right.
Boogs barbecue on and like the guys on the Nats broadcast are like, "Oh, it looks like he's making him a roast beef sandwich."
Yeah.
Like, no, it's Boogs. It's pit beef. It's like what they do. That's a thing there. And so like you're not even educated enough to be like, that's a half smoke. That's a chili, you know, an all the way half smoke.
Like, right.
It's just – it's a minor thing, but it's like you don't know the team that you're supposed to be calling. And so don't combine it. The Mets and the Yankees don't combine it. They obviously they don't have the same network, but like I don't know. I'm just trying to like Hawk Harrelson doesn't call Cubs games when they play each other.
Right, exactly. No, I agree with you. It's stupid.
Oh, it's just dumb.
I think that's what made me not watch as much of it because I was like, I don't want to hear Mike Bordick tell me anything.
And Mike Bordick, like, I like
him. He is a nightmare.
He is not good at calling games.
Like, he is awful.
He just trips over himself all the time. He makes FP look like the greatest color.
The greatest ever. When FP's there, you're like, oh, thank God. Someone who knows the game.
It's like anybody that criticizes FP, I want to just tell them to turn on the other Masson broadcast and listen to Mike Bordick.
Anyway, so yeah, I think that covers most of the story. We had the big interview for you guys, and is there anything else?
One more thing I do want to talk about.
I almost forgot, yeah.
One bright spot on the offense.
That's right.
And that is one Mr. Ryan Zimmerman. And we talked about him a little bit on the podcast last week, but or 2 weeks ago. But, my God, he is on fire.
He is. Last night he was a Reggie Jackson impersonation.
3 home runs and they still lost. But 3 home runs. I mean, it's not even that he's doing it all by himself. He's just hitting like an MVP caliber player. He's hitting – since he's come back, he's had – not counting today, I always have this thing on the right side of sort of – there's 2 right-hand columns on the website. Uh-huh. And on the center column, which is really a right-hand column, it's like just the first small column on the right. I have like where the Nats rank in the NL in terms of like their offense and their pitching. And then I have this thing that I call arbitrary endpoint game. Uh-huh. I think I stole it from Keith Law. It's kind of like – There's no rhyme or reason to it, but like you can pick any point in the season and go up to today and say this is what this guy's been doing since this day. And so I have Zimmerman came back on the 3rd of May, struck out 4 times. Since that day, I have his numbers. He's had 97 plate appearances, which is give or take a 1/6 of a season. So it's not an insignificant amount. It's probably not enough to – it's enough to still call a small sample size. But 357 batting average, 443 on base, 595 slugging, and 5 home runs.
Wow.
I mean, he has been – I mean, those numbers over the last – that's basically his May. That's, I don't know, Miguel Cabrera numbers, I guess.
Yeah, it is.
I mean
– and what about his averages? Is this then the highest it's been in a long time?
It keeps going up because I mean, he's I predicted him to be the team MVP at the beginning of the year.
Wow.
And right now, it's between him and, if I'm just talking about hitters.
Right. Him and Bryce.
Between him and Bryce, right?
Right.
And they have very similar numbers right now. Bryce has more home runs, but thanks to the other night, Zimmerman's pretty close.
I think them hitting they hit in the lineup is affecting the competition between them, too, which is great. They want to both be great.
I'm just ready for – Harper hadn't been the same since he crashed into the wall in L.A., and it's a health thing, I'm sure, and he's just not 100%, and kind of glad he's sitting out for a few days. I'd rather have him at 100% than him at 75% for a long stretch.
Right.
Obviously, he needs to get better. If he doesn't, then just put him in and have him be 75%. But assuming he does get better, having those two hit back-to-back and then LaRoche hitting again, which is what he's been doing.
That is true.
I mean, LaRoche has had a great May, too.
Yes, You know what else is last night? I mean, we talked about the three home runs from Zimmerman, but his defense last night was, like, back.
His throws, like, still kind of take a breath when he makes the throws, right. But he made an incredible play yesterday. You know, LaRoche is hitting .341.
Whoa.
Or .25 on base and a .637 slugging in May.
Oh, my God.
So LaRoche is actually hitting better than Zimmerman in May. Yeah. So maybe LaRoche should be taking the MVP award that I'm giving out.
There you go.
And the MVP may be LaRoche. But the point is, you have LaRoche and you have Zimmerman hitting. You throw... Get Worth back.
Yeah, that's the key right there.
Get Harper back. Both of those guys are not supposed to be out long term. Get them back. Maybe they'll be back. LaRoche may be back tomorrow. I don't know.
Now, here's my closing question for you, because this is the one. Since we're not going to be here for another 2 weeks, we're going to be in June, and we all know what happens at the beginning of July. It's the middle of the season. Does this team make a move? Is it too early to even talk about it?
But no, it's not. It's not too early.
Does this team make a move at All-Star break? I think they have to.
Where do you see them making a move?
They have to make a move to fill that second base position if they've decided that Espinosa.
That's the one place that I could see them making a move, right.
And you need to bring in a veteran guy. God, I would love a Chase Utley if it's possible to work that deal. But I think a veteran type guy, caliber like that, is what you need if they're trying to go playoffs. I think.
Yeah, I think, one of the guys that I just picked out, I actually went through the bottom of the barrel in terms of teams.
Right.
And just looked at what teams were in last place. And, like, one guy I saw on the Dodgers are in last place right now. Mark Ellis is their second baseman.
I love it.
He's having a decent season, but he doesn't have any power. Yeah. I mean... You know,
we need a contact guy, though. That's all we need. Someone to get on base.
Just somebody to do better than what the other guys are doing. Right. Ricky Weeks is doing horrible, but Milwaukee's in last place. Miami, I don't think they start an actual second baseman.
I like Houston's second baseman, but he is a franchise player.
There's no way Houston's trading Altuve.
No way.
I think I totally agree with you. I think that it's hard to... I'm not so sure that they're going to make a move, but if they do,
right.
I think it's going to be their hand is forced.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing. They have to.
But I don't think it's going to happen.
Wow.
I actually think that either Lombardozzi is going to hit or Espinosa is going to recover to a point.
I hope you're right. That's a lot to ask.
Espinosa hadn't played in a while, but I think he's looked better the last couple games. He did strike out like three times yesterday. I don't know. Maybe not. I mean, I just think – and then there's the chance of calling up Rendon, right?
That's the other storyline. Do you want him to take a guy who's been a third baseman and now making him a second baseman? I don't like it.
He used to play second. The problem is he's got a lot of – probably low mobility, low range, because he had ankle surgery and ankle issues, and people are talking about how that's just going to be a recipe for disaster in terms of injury. So,
can we get Brett Laurie? Oh, wait, he plays third, too.
Yeah, I think he's a third baseman.
Steve Sachs?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. It's where the move would be made if a move is going to be made.
It's the only thing we really need. I mean, it's the one lacking thing where we have zero production from that part. And defensively, it hasn't been that great.
No, I think Espinoza is a plus defender there. I think he is. And I think Lombardozzi's a good defender, too.
All right. You're right.
The whole team has been in a bit of a defensive, let's call it malaise, but they have good – they have individuals with track records.
All I know is Denard Span has shown me that guy is a gold glover and possibly the best leadoff man I've ever seen on a team.
Denard Span is spectacular.
Oh, my God. What a player that guy is. He was worth every penny we pay that man.
I love him. He's one of my favorite players, and he always tweets after games and before games.
Well, speaking of tweeting, how can they get in touch with you?
Well, when they want to give me advice on how to give those books away or just advice on what to talk about on the podcast or comments or anything, it's at Nationals Review to talk to me and to talk to you.
At Culmination, and remember to go to the National – or not the. Yeah, it's the.
TheNationalsReview.com.
Why did I feel like that was wrong? Don't go to Nationals Review. It's a totally different subject matter.
And then nationalsreview@gmail.com if you want to send me an email.
And I am working hard on trying to get this up in iTunes and back to the way it is and easy to do it. So hopefully that will happen by the time.
Yes.
No, that's not true. Hopefully it'll happen soon.
Before the All-Star break.
Before the All-Star break. Before we make a move. All right, thank you everyone for watching. Send us your feedback. Thank you, Charlie.
Thanks again, Colm. Thanks again to Elliot Smith for being on. That was awesome.
And we'll see you all soon. We'll see you at the park.
See you at the park. Mr. Standing with your back against the wall. They better jump when you say jump. The God that gave you that power, is it merely fame? Mr. It's a time.